We are just about a week away from the one-year anniversary of the Newtown shootings, and just in time, Democrats and Republicans in Congress have agreed on some gun legislation, an extension of the 25-year-old ban on plastic guns that can evade metal detectors. The ban does have a big loophole in it, because anyone who is motivated can now print a plastic gun with a 3D printer. But other than the plastic gun ban, there has been no federal gun control legislation passed in the year since 20 first graders and 6 educators were killed at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, even though there was so much talk about Newtown being a tipping point for gun control. So what happened? Paul Barrett is an expert on the gun industry. He's an assistant managing editor and senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek and author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. Paul Barrett, welcome back to Here and Now.
Always glad to join you.
Well, let's go right back to immediately following Newtown. President Obama was there days after the shooting, and he vowed we will have change. And in April, just before Congress was set to vote on expanded background checks and an assault weapons ban, he blasted Republicans in a speech in Hartford, Connecticut. Let's listen.
They're saying they'll do everything they can to even prevent any votes on these provisions. They're saying your opinion doesn't matter. And that's not right. That is not right. We need a vote.
They're chanting, "We want a vote." What happened, Paul Barrett, to that initial push for action on gun control after Newtown?
Well, they got a vote at the federal level, but the mere fact that the president was pleading for a vote as opposed to charting a course toward actually winning that vote showed you the politically vulnerable position he was actually in. The president suffered a defeat on Capitol Hill, and we got no significant change in federal gun control rules as a result of the atrocity at Newtown. The pro-gun forces, even though they may be a minority in the country overall, are a very, very well-organized minority. And the way Congress is structured right now, it is not possible to pass significant gun control at the federal level. Having said that, there was considerable progress in blue states at the state level, where laws were passed to put in place some of the kinds of restrictions that Obama sought to enact at the federal level.
And of course, the primary opponent to gun control measures was Wayne LaPierre, who leads the National Rifle Association. We remember his press conference right after Newtown and his appearance on Meet the Press. He was saying there should be armed police officers in every school. Let's listen.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Now, people panned that appearance. They said the tone was all wrong for the mood of the country at that time. But Wayne LaPierre, we should say, is still in charge of the NRA.
He's in charge of the NRA, and I think his political performances are widely misinterpreted. He is not seeking to persuade anyone within the Obama administration or on the editorial board of the New York Times. He is speaking to his loyal dues payers of the NRA. And more importantly, he is speaking to those people who are even to his right on the gun issue, who actually think that he compromises too much. The true Second Amendment, complete absolutists. And in the strange way that our gun politics works these days, that is a winning position at the federal level.
And it seemed to be a winning position in the Republican Congress. Let's listen to John Boehner back in April, the House Speaker, talking about new gun control even after Newtown.
Now, I would think that before we begin to add more rules and regulations on law-abiding citizens, that we at least expect our law enforcement personnel and the Department of Justice to enforce the current law, which they are not doing.
Paul Barrett, you say it's not that the NRA had John Boehner in its pocket. It's that so many Americans support the NRA and that position. John Boehner was on the side of the majority of the people.
Yeah, I don't know if it's correct to say that if you took an absolute across-the-board Democratic vote that of the entire population of the United States, that the positions that the NRA advocates would prevail every time. And the way we are organized right now with the tremendous influence that the far right has over the Republican Party, which, after all, controls the House of Representatives, it is a political impossibility to put anything through Congress that would be in any way a meaningful addition to the federal rules that already exist. Having said all this, let's remember there was a fair amount of activity at the state level. If you live in New York, if you live in Connecticut, if you live in Colorado, Maryland, and several other states around the country, the laws actually did change. And the rules for law-abiding citizens and how they can acquire and keep firearms did change.
So why weren't the president and other Democrats able to get more of the American people on their side in favor of stronger gun control measures?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at this. One, I think you need to look at the larger sociological backdrop, the larger mood of the country. In the immediate wake of any kind of mass shooting, of course, people are horrified. But once the horror has subsided slightly, there's a larger sociological truth that to some degree undercuts any push for stiffer gun control. And that is that overall, violent crime is coming down in this country and has been for many years. In other words, overall, we are a safer country. Fewer people are killing each other with guns. In that environment, it actually is more difficult to stand up as a politician and say what we need to do now is add restrictions on how law-abiding people are able to acquire firearms. So that's, I think, the first step of the answer. And within the president's own party, the Democratic Party, he had a number of members of the Senate from red states who were unwilling to go along with them because they were unwilling to face the wrath of pro-gun forces in their home states. We have a very large country, and attitudes toward firearms are very different. And if you're in Alaska or Idaho or Arkansas, even if you're a Democrat, you're likely to be very, very pro-gun. So even if the president is of the same party that nominally controls the Senate, that does not mean he's going to be able to tell the Senate what to do on this issue. In the other part of the Capitol building, the House, that's run by the Republicans.
We're speaking with Paul Barrett, author and Bloomberg Businessweek journalist, about what has happened in this country in about gun control since Newtown 1 year ago. You can leave your thoughts on this at hereandnow.org or at our Facebook page, facebook.com/hereandnowradio. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, offering a variety of insurance products, including auto, renters, boat, and motorcycle. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.
Let's get back to our conversation with Paul Barrett. He's assistant managing editor and senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek. He wrote the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. In the year since Newtown, Congress has so far failed to pass any restrictions on gun rights. States, including Connecticut, New York, and Colorado, have tightened their gun laws, but other states have relaxed their rules on carrying concealed weapons. And Paul, President Obama did issue executive orders on gun control, banning guns from being registered under trust or corporation, something which gets around gun buyer background checks. What impact have those executive orders had?
Well, you know, I think that activity is so marginal that it's barely worth attention. I mean, personally, it's not something that I object to. But on the other hand, if you think that's going to have anything to do with affecting either ordinary crime on the street, the holding up of convenience stores, the mugging of individuals, gang violence in bad neighborhoods, or the anomalous situation of the random mass shooting, I think that's a fantasy. That kind of tinkering really is just at the margins.
You mentioned that some gun control measures were being enacted at the state level. Of course, there's also the case of Colorado, where two state senators in September were recalled because they supported the state's new law to expand background checks and limit ammunition magazines. Here is one of them, John Morse, who was the president of the Colorado Senate.
What we did was the right thing. And I said months ago, if doing this costs me my political career, that's a very small price to pay.
And just last week, Paul Barrett, a third Colorado Democrat, decided to resign rather than face a recall.
Yeah, a very, very dramatic and, again, a very telling illustration of the laser-like focus that pro-gun forces are able to bring to bear when they want to concentrate their efforts on a given jurisdiction. But that's not because they've arrived in Colorado as if they're an alien force from another planet. They are able to rev up local activists who go to the polls to mount something like these recall campaigns.
Now, since Newtown, there have been at least 16 mass shootings in the United States. There was, of course, the shooting in Washington, D.C. at the Navy Yard. There was the shooting in Nevada at the school. There was the LAX shooting that we've talked about. There were shootings in Manchester, Illinois, and Waynesville, Indiana, Tulsa, Albuquerque, you name it. Let's listen to Sharon Watts, who founded Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, who had actually been lobbying for gun control on Capitol Hill the day of that shooting.
How do we live in a country that allows this to keep happening? I wonder what it's going to take to get our cowardly, lazy Congress to get off of their behinds and to protect us as they protected themselves when they went on lockdown during this mass shooting on Monday.
So, Paul Barrett, answer that question. How do we live in a country that allows this to keep happening?
Well, the problem is that the very heartfelt emotion expressed by Ms. Watts there, who, as it happens, I spoke to yesterday at some length about all of these issues, while completely understandable at an emotional level, really doesn't take you very far in policy terms or in practical terms. And here's why. Let's look at the Navy Yard shooting as an example. Really nothing that Ms. Watts has been pushing in terms of banning assault weapons or magazine capacity would have had any bearing whatsoever on that horrific incident at the Navy Yard. The weapon used was an old-fashioned shotgun, a long gun that is on no one's ban list. In fact, it's the exact kind of gun that Vice President Biden suggested earlier this year was the kind of long gun that everyone should have in their home. And he said he had advised his wife to use if she heard a rustling out in the front yard, she should go out on the porch and fire off a couple of rounds. So this illustrates that in a country that is already permeated by gun ownership, where the civilian possession of guns is seen as commonplace, it's simply not as easy and shouldn't be as easy to simply say, this isn't the country I want to live in. I want to live in a different and better country. That just doesn't take you anywhere. In the case of the Navy Yard shooting, I think the only direct applicable thing to talk about is mental health treatment, is how could this man who had been identified as someone who was unstable, the police had had an eye on him in the days and weeks prior to this shooting, you know, why was it that he hadn't been involuntarily taken in to custody and given some type of treatment, whether he wanted it or not? Now, if you want to talk about that, I think that's a very practical approach. But talking about assault weapons or the horror of the fact that some people like guns really has nothing to do with what happened at the Navy Yard.
Okay, but you would also have people say, well, why shouldn't we just have universal background checks?
I'm all for it, but I'm not. But universal background checks wouldn't do a darn thing
in that case.
In that case, or in most of the cases of these mass shootings, they wouldn't have done anything to Adam Lanza up in Newtown either. All of those guns were legally purchased and legally in the home of that disturbed young man. So you see, unless you're proposing actually confiscating guns, or you're talking about you know, people not being allowed to buy guns at all. Okay, those very extreme proposals might have some bearing on these situations. But talking about tinkering with the rules of how we lawfully acquire guns doesn't address the mass shooting situations. And I think it's also the case that it doesn't really have much to do with violent crime on the streets on a day-to-day basis. I am not arguing against universal background checks. In fact, I've written over and over in favor of universal background checks. I think it makes sense and would potentially have some effect at the margins, but it's not going to stop the next suicidal, mass homicidal shooter who goes into a movie theater or a school, sad to say.
Do you see any day when the United States joins a number of other countries around the world that simply don't allow guns?
No. That's an easy answer. Do you see a day when a member of Congress stands up and says, I am going to dedicate my career to repealing the Second Amendment? When that day happens, then your question becomes operative.
So here we are, 1 year after Newtown. Do you think it is actually easier to own and operate a gun now than it was back then?
I think if you have to give a one-word answer, the one-word answer is yes, outside of those states where new laws have been enacted. And I say yes because I think the overall environment in the United States has moved in a libertarian direction, in a pro-gun direction, away from the idea that the regulation of the lawful acquisition of firearms has much effect on crime. I think we are in a very fascinating era that favors gun rights, and that's been the case for some dozen years or so.
Paul Barrett is an assistant managing editor and senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek. He's the author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. Paul Barrett, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts at hereandnow.org. Of course, many people say it's not about gun control. It's about mental health and that's where the attention should be focused. But on the issue of gun control, what happened to that initial push after Newtown? And is there anything at this point that could be done to get that kind of momentum for new measures back? Let us know at hereandnow.org or at facebook.com/hereandnowradio.